It's unacceptable. They have violated every single UN Security Council resolution that we've had.
North Korea's latest missile ignites strong reaction. It's Wednesday, August 30th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, appeals are made to protect Myanmar refugees. Cambodians stand up for land rights. Forced disappearances increasing in China. We meditate on a new app, tapping tech talent at home. It's all on today's VOA Asia. For the first time, North Korea has launched a ballistic missile designed to carry a nuclear payload over Japan before it fell apart, crashing into the Pacific waters off Hokkaido. South Korea said the missile launched from a site near Pyongyang early Tuesday. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe met with reporters after speaking with President Donald Trump by phone and said both governments are in agreement that the missile launch poses an unprecedented and grave threat. The UN Security Council later met to discuss tougher sanctions as UN Ambassador Nikki Haley expressed dismay over the latest missile launch.
We are going to talk about what else is left to do to North Korea. No country should have missiles flying over them like those 130 million people in Japan. It's unacceptable. They have violated every single UN Security Council resolution that we've had. And so I think something serious has to happen.
Earlier this month, the Council unanimously voted for more strict sanctions following two intercontinental ballistic missile tests. South Korea, which is in the midst of joint military exercises with the United States, also condemned the launch and conducted bombing drills at a firing exercise area. Melissa Hannum is a senior research associate in East Asia Nonproliferation Matters at the Middlebury Institute of International Studies in California. She tells VOA's Victor Beatty the missile appeared to have been the Hwasong-12 and was not a successful launch.
The missile failed and broke into at least three pieces, so it's hard to discriminate other missiles from it since the missile was behaving unusually to begin with. I also find it really interesting that they launched it from the location they launched from, the Sunmun area where Pyongyang International Airport is located. Because launching a missile you don't have confidence in so close to your capital is quite a risk.
Exactly what is this Hwasong-12?
The Hwasong-12 is an intermediate-range ballistic missile, and it is designed to carry a warhead, a payload. It is not a space launch vehicle, like the Unha-3, for example. So it's not the kind of rocket you would use to launch a satellite.
Would this missile have reached Guam, or could it have reached North America if it were fully operational with a nuclear warhead?
If it was a Hwasong-12, and if it was carrying a payload of around 500 kilograms, perhaps even a little less, it probably could reach Guam, but not the mainland U.S.
A lot has been said in recent days that North Korea was showing restraint. Does this change the picture?
Oh, yeah. North Korea is not showing any restraint. With the exercises happening in its neighborhood, it seems to be doing one of its cyclical, provocative periods right now. Overflying Japan is a very risky game for them. This is not a period of time where they're rolling things back at all.
Were you surprised, Melissa, that Japan did not attempt to shoot down this missile?
Well, it depends on the altitude that the missile was at when it was flying over Japan.
According to one report, the missile reached an altitude of about 550 kilometers and flew a distance of about 2,700 kilometers.
So using that information, that's how we would make an early guess that it was a Hwasong-12, but it was probably at too high an altitude, you know, in the period where Japan's ballistic missile defense would have sensed it. They're able to target missiles that are aimed at Japan, but not missiles that are just overflying Japan.
Melissa Hannum doubts little more effective can come from tightening sanctions. She suggested dialogue with North Korea. As distasteful as that might be for Japan, it may be the only way to lessen the nuclear and missile threat. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. President Trump says all options on the table after North Korea missile launch. Islamic State becoming a growing presence in Southeast Asia. China urged to end illegal practice of enforced disappearances. Cambodian indigenous minorities fighting tide of development. Not just Rohingya, but also Buddhists flee Myanmar violence. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. We also invite you to stop by the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. The UN Refugee Agency is urging Bangladesh to give refuge to Rohingya Muslims amid reports that people fleeing violence in Myanmar's western Rakhine state are being turned away. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
The UNHCR reports some 5,200 people have entered Bangladesh from Myanmar since late Thursday, following an attack by Rohingya fighters against 30 police stations. The agency says thousands of people who fled, fearing reprisals by the Myanmar military, reportedly are stuck along the Myanmar side of the border. UNHCR spokesman Adrian Edwards tells VOA his agency cannot confirm the reports. He says the refugees are in many places along the border and staff is unable to be present at every location.
Clearly there are people fleeing safety and needing refuge, need access. Of course, we're in touch with the Bangladeshi authorities. These appear to be isolated instances from what we can see at the moment, so I don't think there's a systematic thing going on here. Do we have access to the populations to help them inside, on the other side of the border? No, we don't at the moment.
Edwards says the UNHCR cannot verify reports that hundreds, if not thousands, of people have been killed and injured in Rakhine State.
We've seen differing reports of a number of fatalities, including statements that have been made by the Myanmar authorities. We're not in position to verify those. We are appealing for borders to remain open. We do think it's very important that people be allowed to seek safe refuge.
This is the worst outbreak of violence in Rakhine State since October, when Rohingya fighters killed 9 police officers, triggering a mass exodus. A recent report by the International Organization for Migration says around 87,000 people have fled to Bangladesh over the past 6 months. Members of the Rohingya community are ineligible for citizenship in Myanmar because of a controversial 1982 law. Predominantly Buddhist Myanmar has faced criticism for its treatment of the Rohingya minority. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Happening now in Asia, devastating seasonal monsoon rains, flooding, and landslides in South Asia have killed more than 1,200 people, affecting nearly 41 million across northern India, southern Nepal, and northern Bangladesh. While floods are typical for the June-September monsoon season, this year's is seen as the worst flooding in decades. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Thanks for stopping by. In Cambodia, the issue of land rights is a constant source of tension. The country's biggest dam to date is set to go online in just weeks. It will add 400 megawatts of power to the country's critically overstretched grid. But the social and environmental costs of the project are huge, especially for minority villagers facing displacement. In rural Stung Treng province, some members of an indigenous group are taking a stand. David Boyle has this report.
This pig sacrifice is probably one of the last the indigenous Benue community will ever make on their traditional land, here on a tributary of the Mekong River. Rising waters swelling behind the gates of a 400 megawatt hydropower dam will soon swallow Kabal Ramias and its ancestral spirits for good. The government has ordered residents to relocate, and while many have accepted the ultimatum, at least 50 families here have decided to stay and defend their sacred land.
If they don't respond, we still keep to fight, demand them to respond to what they violate and destroy our land, our life, our property, everything.
Laurent is an ardent defender of his people's fast-vanishing identity, which is being crushed as mainstream society encroaches further and further into their lands. For these activists, relocation equals the death knell for the Benoungs' unique way of living off the land. They're urging their Benoung brothers and sisters to resist at all costs. On the other side of the argument is almost 1.8 million cubic metres of water amassing behind Cambodia's biggest dam. The more than $800 million project is supposed to supply power to five provinces and is backed by firms from China and Vietnam, as well as one of Cambodia's richest tycoons. Cambodia's thirst for electric power is surging, with demand expected to triple between 2012 and 2020. The country currently imports much of its power needs. But the cost these gates will inflict on the Mekong's fish stocks, the primary source of protein to as many as 80% of Cambodians, are predicted to be devastating. Combine this with the displacement of an estimated 4,000 families from a 335 square kilometre inundation zone, and it's easy to see why activists, villagers and conservation groups are asking development for whom. All of this has made the project a sensitive topic, as has the mobilisation of this community, who are openly defiant and overwhelm security forces blocking access to the village. It's about a two-hour, extremely bumpy ride through jungle to reach the village from the main road. Out here, the arms of government barely reach, and the indigenous minority villagers pride themselves on their self-sufficiency. Their houses are simple and modest, but they stand on land that for the Benoung is alive with the spirits of their buried ancestors. The Benoung live off the land, avoiding the use of money where they can. Their remote lifestyle is tough and offers little in the way of security. Nevertheless, Srang Lang says she will never leave the land her grandfather was given by the late King Norodom Sihanouk in exchange for a pair of elephant tusks. The houses at this relocation site do look better than those offered in many other Cambodian land disputes. Thousands of people from villages in the inundation zone have taken the compensation offer, leaving communities divided. Sa Pon's brother has refused to leave, but Pon believes life in the new village is better. Because Pon was forced by declining fish stocks to stop working as a fisherman, he's happy to be integrated into the formal economy. But there are plenty of others here who are much less satisfied with a deal they feel forces them into subsistence dependency. And like everywhere we go, company and government officials are present to make sure the discontent keep quiet. The serious environmental impacts and large-scale displacement resulting from the dam could be argued to be necessary costs for supplying desperately needed power into the Cambodian grid while bringing economic opportunities to impoverished communities. But as is increasingly the case in Cambodia, that's a debate the government simply does not want the public to have. David Boyle for VOA News in Stung Trang Province, Cambodia.
This story, as you might have guessed, is rich with video from Cambodia, and when you can, stop by voanews.com or our VOA Asia Facebook page to see it. You're listening to VOA Asia.
From Pink to Pitbull, Beyonce to Bruno Mars, the hits live here on the Top 20 Countdown. Hi, I'm Ray McDonald, and for the past 30 years, I've been counting down the very best of the Billboard Hot 100 Pop Singles Chart. The hit list never sleeps, so don't you miss a moment of the action. Join me every Thursday for the Top 20 Countdown, right here and worldwide on the Voice of America.
This news alert from VOA Asia, Sea Shepherd, the environmental group famous for tracking, exposing, and occasionally ramming Japanese whalers, says it can no longer compete with them on the high seas. In a statement, the group's founder, Paul Watson, says Japan is tracking Sea Shepherd ship movements in real time, making intercepts nearly impossible. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for the latest. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Ahead of Wednesday's International Day of the Victims of Enforced Disappearance, rights groups are calling on China to end its self-legalized practice of involuntary disappearances of human rights defenders and their family members. Rights groups add China must urgently repeal its residential surveillance at a designated location and sign the International Convention for the Protection of Persons from Enforced Disappearance. Chinese human rights defenders say police under the Xi Jinping government have extensively applied to the Criminal Procedure Law's Article 73, passed in 2012, to legalize its forced disappearances of individuals suspected of offenses related to national security or terrorism for 6 months. But the rights group's Hong Kong-based researcher Francis Eve called the practice an abuse of power under a, quote, fake legal structure.
And it very much leaves the people who've been disappeared with no protection and at very great risk of being tortured. Because you don't disappear someone to treat them nicely.
The group found that during the 2015 lawyer crackdown alone, China put 17 rights lawyers and activists under residential surveillance, seven of whom have later come forward with torture allegations. The UN Human Rights Council had also documented 41 disappearance cases in China as of last July, which Chinese authorities have either refused to clarify or allow a country visit by the council's working group, citing judicial sovereignty, an excuse rights activists say is hard to justify.
It shows how the Chinese government is not cooperating with the UN, how it's hypocritical for it to sit on the Human Rights Council, how its membership pledge, you know, is empty words.
Activists like Kit Chan of the China Human Rights Lawyers Concern Group say China should honor its commitments to the council.
Chinese government deliberately tried to oppose the universal values by creating a kind of false opposition, something China versus Western.
According to the groups, one extreme victim of forced disappearance is rights lawyer Wang Kuangchang, who has been in police custody since August 2015 and denied any access to family members or a lawyer of the family's choice. Wang is still awaiting trial. Liu Xia is another extreme victim. Diagnosed with depression and a heart condition, the widow of Liu Xiaobo has been under house arrest since 2010 after her husband was given the Nobel title, and it's believed that China has not ended her incarceration even after the country's only Nobel Peace Award winner died of liver cancer while in police custody last month. Our thanks to Joyce Huang for contributing this story. This news alert from VOA Asia, Canadian police officers in Montreal chased down and caught a Laotian-born alleged drug smuggler who's on the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement list of its 10 most wanted criminals. He was arraigned Thursday on charges of drug possession, obstructing the work of police, and false documents. Share all the big stories and fun features with your friends on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, a common complaint for busy and stressed out people today is not being able to find time and a place to unwind. VOA's Latika Hoke tells us about a new smartphone application that promises to solve these problems by helping users practice an old Chinese form of healing meditation while on the go.
Chinese software engineer Peng Cheng is using the Sway meditation app on his smartphone to help him relieve stress. The app guides him through a program of meditation and slow motion movements based on centuries-old Chinese healing practice Tai Chi.
The way you use it is that you move your body in a slow, continuous, and gentle way. Once you do that, the phone detects and give meaningful feedback.
That's important because most people, but especially beginners, wonder if they're making the right movements.
But actually, we talk about the movement quality. It is the movement quality of slow, continuous, and gentle bodily movement that, and you need to sustain it for an extended period of time.
Peng teamed up with Malmo, a Sweden-based digital product studio, to design the app. It was tested using EEG scanners in both noisy and calm environments. Experts at the University of Sussex in Britain who checked the results confirmed that the app helped improve relaxation and lowered mental workload levels. But traditionalists are not buying it.
I think learning to meditate from an app is kind of like learning to swim from a YouTube video. It's a good way to get some tips and some pointers, but it's not going to replace personal instruction. Having somebody right there and having that exchange, that immediate feedback with a human is really the core of teaching.
Creators of the Sway app don't deny the value of guided classroom meditation. They say the app addresses the need of stressed out people to find a moment of calm.
The message we want to send is that it's actually not technology. It's you, it's us human being already have the capability to be mindful with your body.
Sway is available for downloading on iOS devices for about $3. Zlatica Hoek, VOA News, Washington.
While you're trying to find your zen, the tech industry is trying to find women and diversity. It's a headline issue, but so-called returnship programs are now giving companies the chance to tap into a new talent pool, former stay-at-home moms and dads. VOA's Tina Trin explains how their skills translate into the tech world.
Employees at the New York tech company AppNexus are a diverse bunch. So diverse, in fact, that some, like Elaine Chang, do not have technology experience.
I was a full-time mom for 4.5 years. I have 2 daughters, a 5-year-old and a 2.5-year-old.
When it came time to look for work, Chang faced a hurdle many women returning to the workforce experience, explaining the gap in her resume.
They often get feedback from companies and recruiters and hiring managers that makes them believe that they'll never be hired, that no one will ever overlook their gap.
Now, mid-career internships, or returnships as they're called, are giving women and men a shot at entirely new careers, regardless of their previous experience. Path Forward was started inside a tech company and now works with other tech companies to coordinate paid 16-week assignments that can lead to full-time jobs.
What these companies of every size in the tech sector have in common is rapid growth and also not enough talent to fulfill their need.
Returnships give companies the chance to access a more mature and professionally diverse talent pool. Participants get to try jobs they otherwise wouldn't have known about. A former teacher, Chang sought related positions while being open to new ones. She now works as a product support specialist.
I saw them hiring for someone who's passionate about learning and teaching, and I could really relate. I decided to just give it a shot and see what happened.
In her role, she's actually spending quite a bit of time with our clients, teaching them about our platform, helping address their issues.
We try to educate both the partners on how to think about those various skills and experiences, and also women on how to present that in terms that businesses will understand.
Chang admits the career switch has been challenging, but appreciates the opportunity to learn and grow.
And the most important factor is I have 2 daughters now, and they grow up in a world that is changing so quickly with technology, and I just want to be part of that.
For this mom, that means taking the path forward, one step at a time. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
You've been listening to VOA Asia, and you may be among some of our listeners who are listening via the voice of Chung Rung, Star Radio FM 88.3 at Chung-Jung Christian University in Tainan, Taiwan. We welcome you and thank you for joining us today, and wherever you happen to be listening to us. Don't forget you can also download us as a podcast and take VOA Asia with you. You can check us out on iTunes and SoundCloud. We thank our director Tracy Carter, engineer Jim Harmon, managing editor Diane Gao, Ali Ogden, and David Bird, part of our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead.